swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track. Swap shop trains are coming, bringing all those great bargains back. Great folks, great calls, great sponsors, little inspiration too. So hop on board for value so that little train don't chug right on past you. Welcome to the Swap Shop, the unregulated free market, governed only by common courtesy and common sense, with very few rules. You're invited to buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral. If you have a business, you can have one free plug. Then contact me off-air at charles@libertywatchradio.com for some advertising rates. This program is a for-profit business. Please only one call per week unless it's a lost child or lost pet. You can try 5 times to sell something. Then if it doesn't move, please take it elsewhere. Please make a list. Give the brand name of your things if you know it. The color, the size. If it's a car, give the mileage. And please give your phone number at the speed of the pen that the listener is using to write it. This program is produced and hosted by Charles Heller. Any mistakes are his responsibility. This just in. Dateline, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Celebrated historian Bertram Oxley has uncovered a memorandum from former Japanese Emperor Hirohito to Admiral Yamamoto, dated December 6, 1941, showing that the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor was motivated by an offensive film made by Charlie Chaplin, ridiculing Japanese cuisine. Quote, contrary to historical accounts over the last 70-plus years, what appeared to be a meticulously planned surprise attack was actually a spontaneous demonstration by moderate sushi connoisseurs within the Japanese Imperial Navy in response to a hateful and offensive movie. Therefore, extremist elements within the Japanese military co-opted the spontaneous attack, transforming it into the overseas contingency operation, sometimes referred to as World War II. This is a remarkable find, declared Reginald Smythe, chairman of the Progressive Historians Association and former Obama State Department official. Quote, had President Roosevelt condemned this movie instead of uttering that infernal day of infamy provocation, the war could have been avoided and millions of lives would have been saved, unquote. White House spokesman Josh Earnest, asked this afternoon about the memo's discovery, stated, quote, of course, hindsight's 20/20, but one can only wonder how much pain and suffering could have been averted had FDR simply apologized to Hirohito at the outset. Fortunately, we've evolved to a more sophisticated strategy of leading from behind, so we're unlikely to repeat the disastrous mistakes of the past, unquote. This has been Irreconcilable News. Now back to our irregularly scheduled programming. Now let's head down that free market track. You may swap at will.
Well, no, for the first half hour you cannot swap at will. Most of you who've been listening to this program for part or all of the 16 years that it has been on the air, on two different stations now, know that, and 10 years on this station, KVOI in Tucson, know that Swap Shop is about buying, selling, and trading things. But on occasion, when there is something that is of great value, or could be of great value to the listeners, I will vary away from the format, and we'll talk about that other topic. To that end, there is a cultural icon on the other end of this phone, and she had a part of a culturally significant show in our culture. It is Dawn Wells, and she's a graduate of Stevens College, Columbia, Missouri, where she majored in chemistry. She transferred to the University of Washington in Seattle, where she graduated in 1960 with a degree in theater, arts, and design. In Hollywood, Wells made her debut on ABC's The Roaring Twenties and was cast in episodes of such television series as 77 Sunset Strip, The Cheyenne Show, Maverick, and Bonanza, before she took the role of Marianne on Gilligan's Island. It is a pleasure, a joy, and a pleasure to welcome to the telephones and microphones of Swap Shop, Dawn Wells. Welcome.
Thank you, thank you. This is fun.
I'm glad you hold it that way, and your book is fun too, although in the beginning I thought it light and I was silly. As I read, it got deeper and deeper, or my understanding of what you were trying to say did, and I got a kick out of it and a lot of good insights and a reminder to do certain things that on which I'm somewhat procrastinating. You have had a fascinating career. You know, your life was not just the Marianne role, which was 50 years ago this year, was it not?
Can you believe that? No, I really can't. 50 years ago, and never been off the air since then, and 30 languages as we speak.
Yeah.
They didn't think we'd last 10 minutes. You know, they thought it was the worst show ever, but they put it on because the audience reaction was good in the test market.
Mm-hmm.
And after the first 6 weeks, we went right to the top 10. So it was sort of a eye-opener to everybody except Sherwood Schwartz, who believed in it 100%.
Uh-huh. Don, you're not on a speakerphone, are you?
I am. Should I turn it off?
Yeah. Can you come off a speaker and go to handset?
Is that better?
Oh, way, way, way better.
Oh, okay.
The dynamics of radio, the way that the amplification works is there's a certain echo in it, and it hears the echo of the phone, and it multiplies it on the speaker. So if you do an interview, it's always better to do it on the handset than on the speaker.
Oh, I didn't know that. Thank you for the info.
My pleasure. I'm not saying it to lecture. I'm saying it to instruct. That's right.
You didn't even have a phone on the island. It's a wonder that I can even do this automatic dial.
There you go. What are these strange buttons? And where is my rotary? Yes.
Exactly. What is this?
You know, my grandfather's house, he moved into it in 1932. And when he sold it in 1964, it still had the old, you know, the telephone that you held the earpiece separately from the mouthpiece.
Oh, gosh, yes. Was it on the wall?
No. It was freestanding. It was a later model. But
wow.
But as a child, I could barely pick it up. It must have weighed 12 pounds.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I wish
I... Keep it from sliding off, I guess.
No, I think because it made a better weapon.
Oh, I see. That was the initial discovery.
Well, you know, there's a reason the male child on Flintstones is called Bam Bam, right? Anyway.
There you go.
Dawn, to start off on a nice light tone, did the moral responsibility of being something of a cultural icon ever settle sort of heavily on your shoulders?
No, because I was raised a Marianne. That was heavy on my shoulders every once in a while. You know, I mean, I don't know what my mother would have done in this generation, because I'm not really hip on all the electronic stuff. I mean, I don't even really type well. So to be able to go from one cell phone into another to look at a picture, I don't know how to do that. Not particularly interested. I've got to get a 12-year-old to come and live with me for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But I really do think I was raised very much like her. So I just assumed she's kind of who I am. You know, a little more educated, a little more sophisticated am I.
Mm-hmm.
But the character of Marianne is very similar. So it didn't weigh on my shoulders, because I really do believe that. I do believe that Marianne's character is viable. And over years, 20, 30, 50, 100 years, those morals and things still work. The manners and the finishing your job and those kind of things still are important in the world.
For what it's worth, I still do hold the door for my date.
Oh, see, isn't that nice?
Well,
and you know, sometimes I'll sit because I'm. You say feminist. Well, I mean, people say feminist. I'm feminist because you're taking care of yourself, and I've never been supported, and I took care of my mother, so I guess I would be in the man's world, so to speak. But I will sit in the car if I'm on a date. I'll just sit there.
Yeah.
So he walks around. Oh, he kind of wonders. Oh, and then they never miss it again.
No, not
but
after
if
the.
It's not expected too. I think it's up to the women sometimes. You guys think you can get away with everything because you can.
Well. You know, I think it's that same gene that, you know, mom has eyes in the back of her head that carry on into adulthood and cause you to be sensitive to a man's insensitivity. So, but once the light goes on, we get it. You know, you know, men, the difference I see in men and women is that you have to give men a mission. If you look a guy in the eye and say, I'm giving you a mission, you will open doors for me. They almost all will snap to attention and go for it.
Well, and I also find that men like you to be direct. All this hinting and
mm-hmm.
I wish this and all that, they don't get it. Their minds don't go that way.
Mm-mm. No.
That's why one of my chapters, I'm going to sneeze, excuse me. I'm allergic to you, my wife.
Oh, well, you know. I have that effect on women, Dawn.
So do you. I'm so sorry. Mercy.
Take a second if you want to grab a sip of water.
Well, right now.
Yes, go ahead. We will. We will have a brief interlude while Dawn has a sip of water, and this will be good. This is why live radio is a good thing, even if there
I'm
are.
Back.
This is why live radio is a good thing, even if there are glitches. You see, if this were on television, we would have just done another take. But on live radio, people get to hear your humanness.
Don't go too close.
Yes. Ooh, I've gotten warned off the first time. This is great. In what way has the Marianne character become for you a window into people's soul?
I think what it is I think it's the connection with the audience that I speak with. It's the fans, and that's the reason I kind of wrote the book. I'd say 80% of the men come up to me and say, I'm married to Marianne. Mm. I'm married to Marianne. There was something about Marianne that you search for as a friend, as a lover, as a mother, as a co-worker, whatever the elements in a wife that you require. She fulfilled it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, she may not have been totally educated, didn't matter. That didn't totally make any difference. And I think the interaction with the fans, their opinion of her has been monumental to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much, can you go through the whole series, you know, from 50 years ago, who sort of made a difference in the way you lived or what you thought? Most of it was fun and kind of escape.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
There's one thing. The book is, by the way, not to be cryptic, the book is called What Would Marianne Do? It's 251 pages. It was published this year. And it's a good read. It's a very good sort of non-preachy primer on life. I thought it was fascinating. One of the head of one of the chapters had a Facebook page of a girl who had really grown up in a terrible circumstance. She'd been physically abused by her family, and then she was bullied at school. And she said that her only respite was that half hour when the show was on, where she could come home and watch that, and in effect sort of feel like she had a family in the castaways.
Oh yes, and I had one young man who said, I was terribly abused. And he said, my only escape was sitting in front of that TV looking at your show. I guess because it really wasn't real, you know, mm-hmm. It's not like a detective story. It was a fantasy, sort of.
Yeah.
But now you've got Survivor and all that other stuff, but it was Robinson Crusoe was really what it was, an inane adaptation.
Yeah, times 7. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I don't know your age. I know mine, and I know I grew up with Bambi and
right.
Snow White
mm-hmm.
and that kind of thing. Well, now we went into the other kind of Frozen and those kind of cartoons, and I think Gilligan's is sort of an adult cartoon, so to speak.
It almost is. Yeah, I'm 57 to answer the question you were too polite to ask, and I won't say yours out of deference to the Ms. Schaefer philosophy, but you're the generation beyond me. You're younger than my parents, but the generation past me. And speaking in terms of generations, the picture of you and your mom in the book is priceless. And you can see, you know, you're kind of hugging her from the side, and you can see that you want her to stay right where she is. And I'm thinking both physically and metaphysically. Tell us a little bit about her and how you were raised.
Boy, my mother was a toughie. My mother was probably the epitome of a mom. She was raised quite strict. Her mother was Italian. Her father was German. My grandmother, her mother, was a phenomenal cook. My grandfather had a wonderful little sense of humor, but they didn't live in Reno. And to just tell you about my mother, when I was a senior in high school, her mother had a full stroke, and my mother full-time worked and also had my grandmother at home and took care of her. I mean, my mother was extremely dependable, very, very smart, quite very strong, but very tiny, and you know how, just tiny, shorter than I am and tiny, and when you're little and strong, it's a different attitude or a different reaction than when you're big and tall and you're strong.
Mm-hmm.
She was just strong-willed. She worked her whole life. My parents were divorced when I was 4, and they remained friends. I don't think my mother ever stopped loving him. She didn't date. She didn't want other men in the house.
Hmm.
She said, "Your father's great. I don't want to distract that." But she didn't say that to me.
No, it was her attitude.
As I got older, I talked to her about it. But she was then the mother of me living with her alone and took that responsibility 100%. She was a brownie leader. She had me in Sunday school, Girl Scouts, all of that kind of stuff. She exposed me without a man at home to do anything. I just thought, as I get to be the age that I am, I understand how difficult that is. It's hard enough to take care of yourself. But and the house was adorable, and we planted vegetables in the backyard, and she was a real mom in a town of Reno, Nevada, with gambling, prostitution, and divorce. That's where Marianne was raised.
Yeah, that's interesting to come up with those values. If you would, Dawn, and I'm going to try not to slip and call you Marianne. If you would, Dawn, hold on for just a little bit. We're going to take our first break of this hour, and we'll be right back. Keep an ear in the music when we come back, if you would, all right?
Okay.
All right, stand by on AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, on the Swap Shop. Very special edition where we're doing the first half hour of Swap Shop with Dawn Wells of Marianne fame of Gilligan's Island, but far, far more than that, an entire career, much of it in the theater, also a producer of a couple movies, one of which I watched over this week in research, and we'll be right back.
This is Herman Cain. You get some good bargains on the Swap Shop on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Call in now and have Charles make fun of your stuff.
Marianne. And welcome back to the Swap Shop on KVOI, where we have the joy and pleasure of having with us Dawn Wells, who portrayed the Marianne character on Gilligan's Island and was had a full career on stage. And she did a number of things. She had I believe a one-woman show in Las Vegas, right?
No.
was a multi-person show?
No, I've never worked Vegas. I lived half in Vegas and half in Reno, Las Vegas. But I don't sing, so I can't do very much where that's concerned.
Harlan put out in the publicity literature that you had a show at the MGM Grand in Vegas in 85.
No.
Oh, well, oops.
My goodness,
oopsie.
I got to call Harlan. I don't know where he got that.
I got to tell you, Harlan is a wonderful guy to work with. Because he can talk to people in my industry and actually make sense, and yet he still gets along with famous people and figures out how to keep them happy.
He's also so totally ethical, and there's no BS coming out of his mouth. I mean, you know, so many people in this business have their different persona, you know what I mean? And he's not. He's really genuine. He's a good man, a nice man, smart. And I've never seen anybody work so hard.
Wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. You produced changing topics gracefully here, you produced two movies for television, one of them being Surviving Gilligan's Island with Bob Denver and Russell Johnson. And this was, of course, after the passing of Jim Backus, Natalie Schaefer, and Alan Hale Jr. It couldn't also have been very long before the unfortunate and, I think, untimely passing of Bob Denver. Did you find making that movie in any way to give you any sense of catharsis or closure about, you know, the full circle of your experience on that program?
No, it really wasn't an epitome to me at all. I just thought that, you know, things were starting to, say, branch off from a big series with highlights. Now everything is so accessible, you know everything going on all the time. And it was sort of, I guess, a documentary, so to speak, of what it was about, who we were before the show, what we were like during the show, and what we were doing afterwards. And, of course, CBS has to put their hand in what they think it should be, but I was very proud of it. I did the same thing, Return to the Batcave, with Adam West, but I didn't have hands-on like I did with Gilligan's, because the most interesting thing to me was the casting. Now I have a whole different impression of casting directors, because it's pretty, you know exactly what you're supposed to be reading for. You know a Gilligan, you know a Ginger, you know a Mrs. Howell. And I was astounded at how far from it some of them were, and very good actors, and very, very professional actors that came in with Mrs. Howell as being totally British. She wasn't British at all. And the key with Gilligan was to get somebody that was vulnerable and physically funny, not just a one-liner, you know? I mean, it was very interesting for me to cast. I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. I sort of like being in control, too. I mean, I like my hand in it. And Sherwood was very nice to allow me to do it, because he didn't give that kind of thing away to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I said I wanted to do it. But at the very end, I said, well, Sherwood, what did you think? As we came out of the theater, and he was sitting down, and he said, well, it was my story. And I took a hold of his hand, and I said, Sherwood, I was there, too.
I love it. You know, I don't think we... Did we ever hear that laugh on the air, on Gilligan's?
I don't think so.
That's a shame, because it's such a gift.
Thank you.
You know whose laugh you remind me a tiny bit of is Tom Magliozzi.
Who is he? I don't know him.
Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers on NPR, the auto repair show.
Nope, don't know it at all.
Oh, goodness. It was a wonderful program. It's still on in rerun, and something that should be close to your heart. And it's an auto repair show, but the two guys are funny. They're two brothers that kind of do tips on life through auto repair.
Cute. Oh, I like that. Where do I find it?
It's on your NPR station. Just look on the internet for the schedule. I know you're not big on computers, but just turn into you live in the Los Angeles area, yes?
Yeah, and what's it called?
Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers.
Click and Clack.
Car Talk is the name of the show. So,
okay.
So here I sit on a commercial station ending up plugging an NPR program. But, oh, well, that's okay. Your book is called A Guide to Life, What Would Marianne Do? And it draws on your life learning experiences to help others. You have, for a long time, mentored other people in acting and in general. In fact, you actually have a class, a retreat that you do, right, for helping other people?
I did. When the economy tanked, the little town that we were in just went under. But I did for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really good lesson. I didn't teach you how to act. You come and you want to be in the film industry. I taught you how to get a job, who you are, how you get your agent, what's your type. Most everything on camera is what do you look like. I'm not talking about beauty. But we know sitting there casting something, when you walk in the door, if you're right or wrong physically. And then can you act? But it's really hard to play against type unless that's what you're doing on purpose.
Yeah,
so, I'd say to this girl, let's try on some wigs. How do you look as a redhead? How do you look as a blonde? I mean, Lonnie Anderson was a brunette. How do you look as a blonde? What's your best color? I used to say, you look great in that hot pink shirt. Well, wear that hot pink shirt to every interview. You're not seeing the same people. Put on what makes you feel good. Put on what makes you happy. Put on that gives you personality. Don't try to be that other character. These are just little things that the longer you're in the business, the more you know. And it's really nice to see hopefuls, some real talent out there. Some people that are only, they just kind of want to be looked at. I mean, it's really fun because I don't have children. So it's really nice for me to be around kids of all ages, basically. I love babies, I love. But.
Yeah, they make babies make you alive. I just found out this week that I'm about to be a step-grandpa.
Oh, how fabulous.
First
when
time.
When does the baby do,
Next spring.
So, spring. Oh,
and it's
fabulous.
Two, it's twins.
Ah, how wonderful.
Yeah, one for each hand. I'll find out
if they're going to be identical or fraternal. Do you know that prior to birth? I don't know.
I don't think they care to find out. I don't know. I'm just interesting stuff. But what is it? What is the urge? Where does that urge come from within you to want to mentor other people?
Well, I like other people to begin with, and I think that there have been nobody specific that I could, rattle off, but that have mentored me in a way,
mm-hmm.
advice to me, caring mm-hmm. about my decisions. And I think it's part not being a mother. I think I have a lot to impart. I like people a lot. I think my mother did too, and my father was really something. My mother used to say, I don't know whether he's going to come home with a bum off the street or the governor. I never know. Your father just likes everybody, and he did, and I do.
Governor,
more like than different.
And the governor was a distinct possibility with him because he was politically involved.
Not necessarily politically. He was very much in the business circle, but not much politically. I never knew who he was voting for.
Mm-hmm.
There was no party. They once asked him to run for governor, but what party, Joe? And we talked about the person. But we didn't have long political discussions. I wasn't old enough then.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to sit down and talk to him now, but I wasn't old enough then to really care. I've cared more about Harry Belafonte than I did president.
Yep. Your life has been touched. Speaking of Harry Belafonte, your life has been touched by so many wonderful people in Hollywood, on the stage, much of the rest of life's bounty. What do you say to people whose experience has been touched by other not so positive influences? How do you mentor somebody who hasn't had the benefit of some of the really rich and wonderful experiences and people that you have?
Well, I have two or three advices. Sometimes it's up to you. Sometimes it's up to you. You see somebody coming from a horribly broken home or abusive, and the kid's just got the guts and the backbone. Sometimes it's a mentor. Sometimes it's somebody, I say that in the book, if you've got, have an adult friend that's not family, because they can be a little bit more objective. I think that's part of it. And I think it's also very difficult, very easy to say when you're 14 years old and can think about it. How easy is it at 7 when you're scared and you don't know? And it's one of the things that really, I don't think we can eradicate it. I think it's going to be happening over and over. And I think there's something in the soul of a child or in the soul of a person that makes you do things. I mean, we are all different. Why are some of us composers, and why are some of us quietly reading in a corner, and somebody else out trying to break the record in racing? I mean, it's interesting to see who we all are, but the core of us is really more the same. And I think, I don't think there's any huge thing. I'm not educated, I'm not educated in that field.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be an age-old question as we come towards the bottom of the hour here, and I know we've only agreed to be on for a half hour or so. There seems to be an age-old question, well, at least 50 years old, about Marianne or Ginger. I think that might be the wrong question for today, if I may be so bold, Dawn. And that is, today I think the question is better asked, Marianne or Miley? Dawn? Is there a wrecking ball? There's no wrecking ball in your future, is there?
No, and that's interesting. I was going to say it could be now Marianne or Mrs. Howell. Everybody's now out looking for money.
That's interesting. That's interesting because you did play the part in a play of Mrs. Howell. You did take that part, did you not?
Barry Williams from Brady Bunch did Thurston, and I did Lovey. I must say that I don't sing, and it was really tough for me.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it seems like we've sort of, there's sort of a cultural downward slide on what we'll accept. I mean, you know, Marianne, if she were on television today, that her navel wouldn't be the only thing we wouldn't be worried about covering up. And I
it's true. And, you know, the year that when we went on the air, birth control had the pill had not been invented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the pill has made a huge cultural difference worldwide. That's a whole other ballgame, because then people get hooking up or whatever we call it. They get all involved without the brain too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's so much promiscuity. I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult thing. It's an individual choice. But talking to a young girl or a young boy about it, it's about you. I think right now, from about age 14 on, your life is pretty well formed. You have a direction. Not intellectually. Not are you going to be an engineer or a park ranger? Not that. But who you're kind of going to be. And what really disturbs me a lot is this bullying. It can't lead to anything. The bullyers or the bullied. It can't. It's very destructive.
I think, though, we make a mistake. We make a mistake in trying to end the bullying or thinking we could prevent the bullying rather than trying to make stronger people to resist bullying. But there's one, as we come down towards the end of the half hour here, you're in mighty fine trim for someone of your life chronometer, shall we say.
Oh, that's a good word. I like that.
Yeah, well, I said I wouldn't. I'm taking the Lillian Schaefer approach on age here. But why do some famous people seem to self-destruct and you seem to soldier on so well?
I think part of it is your upbringing. My mother was a really good mother. I mean, she taught me well. I think I was loved unconditionally. I'm amazed at the people who don't have that background. I think it's in your genes, and I guess I don't know because I don't know that much about therapy and stuff, but if you're in guidance and in some kind of a help as you grow, I really don't know that. Or are some of us born to be soldiers and some of us born not to be? I mean, I don't know. I haven't gotten into it that deep. I don't question who I am. I don't question how I feel about people. I don't question what good is certainly better than even halfway. If I can just say one quick little thing, there was and if we go over the 15 minutes, it may be bad for you. It's not bad.
No, it's not bad for me. I'd have you on for 2 hours. But
I never stop talking, do I? But there was an article about famous people and what was one of the things that influenced their life so much. And this one man said, my mother, he said, when I was about 4, I wanted some milk, and she was busy in the sink. And he said, I want a glass of milk, and she said, well, you can get it yourself. So I went in and opened the refrigerator. I don't know whether it was a carton or a bottle, but it fell and spilled all over the floor. And he said, my mother's reaction was, oh, well, look at that. Look what you did. Oh, look what you did. She said, well, you're going to have to clean it up anyway. Play in it as long as you want to. And he said, I got out cookie cutters and stuff and played around a little bit, and then I cleaned it up. That colored his whole attitude about how to treat a crisis. You know, when you think about it, she didn't yell at him. She didn't scream at him. She didn't make him feel bad. He didn't do it on purpose. And I thought, that's a wise mother to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty simple statement that makes a huge difference.
You could get so many life lessons about, number one, cleaning up your own mess, but number two, not being harsh and judgmental on yourself. You know, maybe the reason that you don't wonder about why you have done well over the years and others have kind of self-destructed is you are so comfortable in your own skin.
I really am, and I'm a very positive person.
Yeah?
I really am. I mean, I always, as you're reading in the book, I don't know if you...
I read it. I read every one of the 251 pages of it.
Oh, bless your heart. Well, about debating, and I was writing the book, I went, oh, Dawn, ding, the light went on. That's why I am the way I am. Because I couldn't compete in sports, and I didn't do any theater or anything in high school, but I was on the debating team, and I was a really good speaker. I went to the national whatever they were way back then. And as I was writing that and saying that, I went, wait a minute. I do look at both sides of everything. You get all emotional about one side, but I always look one side or the other because in a debate, as you know, maybe your audience doesn't, all of them know, but you have to prepare both sides of it because you don't know which side you're going to defend when you go up for the competition. So you have to say, oh, let's say it's abortion, pro-abortion or against abortion. You have to prepare both sides of it to be a good argument in order to win it. And I look at life that way. What's the worst that could happen? What are the odds of this happening? Or what's it going to do for me? Not for me, but what's it going to do to the universe? And it's a quick decision. But as I think about it, it's a good way to weigh your life because that's the big brain and the little brain. In my book, the big brain and the little brain. The little brain says, I can do it, I can do it. The big brain says, wait a minute, the red light says you shouldn't cross the street. You know, I think it's maybe we don't analyze so much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
and,
we should.
And the book is What Would Marianne Do? And it's sort of a good tome on how to deal with some of the things in life from the perspective of someone who's had a lot of experience having to make decisions. It's very good. It's published by Little Brown, right? Is that correct?
Why are you asking that question?
Because, I'm trying to help you.
Wait a minute. Oh, my God, don't tell me that. Wait a minute.
That's okay. That's okay.
No, it isn't okay at all. But
if they just Google, what would Marianne do, they'll find it easily.
A Guide to Life, What Would Marianne Do?
Right, A Guide to Life, What Would Marianne Do? And it's really well portrayed. It's sort of juxtaposed against...
It's Roman Littlefield is what it used to be, but they've been sold. That's right. Why I'm kind of vacillating. Littlefield is the...
Is the publisher, right.
Is the publisher, yeah.
Not to make this interview about Gilligan's Island, because it certainly is not. It's about Dawn Wells and her life experiences. But is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed, I mean, we were, you know, there we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the swap shop. what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Oh, you are so rich. It is so fun. It is so fun. Any guy that would let go of you is an idiot. Whoops, that came out.
I have a chapter called "I Like Men." Somebody said to me in one of the reviews. Well, for God's sake, you've been dating for 40 years. Haven't you found anybody yet?
Well,
and I thought that was such a cute comment. No, I haven't found anybody yet.
Whoopsie. Can you, if you stay with us for just a little bit, we have one more break we're going to do. And
yes, and I'm going to try to find out the name of my publisher. Go on, TV.
I tell people, I know what you mean. It's hard to be 57. All right, stand by. On AM 1030, KVOI, Cordero, Tucson, The Voice.
Hey, this is Michael Medved, and boy, can you ever get a bargain on Swap Shop on AM 1030, KVOI.
I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush until life's no fun. All I really gotta do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and don't know why.
And we're a little bit in a hurry, but we do know why, because we're coming to the end of the time we have with Dawn Wells of Marianne fame from Gilligan's Island and many stage productions and such. And that was one of the songs, Al, that you mentioned as your favorites in the book, What Would Marianne Do? And so I thought I'd use it for comeback music in the second break.
You played also We Love Marianne, whatever
right.
That song is, by the Southern Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote that for me last year for my birthday.
That's kind of a cool thing, isn't it?
Oh, I think so. I think it's wonderful. It's getting a lot of play. It's cute.
It is, but, you know, so is its subject. Stand by. We have a lady who would like to talk to you, who I believe might have something of a family connection. Joe, you're on the air with Dawn Wells.
Well, Dawn, what an absolute privilege. I want you to know that many, many years ago, when I was a student nurse at the hospital at Sunrise in Las Vegas, who did I take care of but your dad?
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding at all. And
you
let
mean,
me tell
you. You mean when he passed away that visit? That
yes,
time?
That visit. But I took care of him at the time, and all he could talk about was his wonderful daughter, Dawn. And he said to me, and you know what? She wouldn't even use my name. She went on her own laurels because she said, I want to prove myself that I'm a good enough actress to get that part. And that's what he was talking about. Isn't it something? All these years I remember.
Oh, it is certainly something. I mean, you have no idea the shock of that experience because
yes.
We lost him. And,
yes.
And he wasn't really sick. And
no,
he was very young, so it was a real shock to me, and we had never sat down and talked about my career at all.
No, and he said, I can't say I was too excited about her going into acting, but she said she's going to prove herself, and she was such a darling person and so vivacious, and that's all he could talk about. And then he
Aww.
Said to me, let me tell you what happened, and this is ingrained in my mind. Remember now, I was a student nurse, I think it was in 1967, because I graduated in 68, and this was at Sunrise Hospital, Las Vegas. And I can see him as vividly as he's sitting right in front of me, and he said to me, would you please massage my ankle? And I said, I need to read your chart first. And I did. And I know that he was put in there for a DVT, which is a deep vein thrombosis. And I said, I'm so sorry, Mr. Wells. I just cannot do it, sir, because if I were to dislodge an embolism, it could kill you. He says, oh, you're just like all the rest. He says, nobody will massage my ankle. And I said, I really cannot do this. And he really got angry with me. And I said, please don't be angry, sir. I just don't want to do something that will injure you. And so I had to leave there because he was angry with me. And the next morning I went to visit him before my shift to make sure he was okay. And lo and behold, that's when he had passed. And I think that somebody got talked into massaging his ankle.
Well, let me tell you, we're doing this on the air, and I don't know if that's really the right thing we should be doing.
Uh-huh.
But I had just gotten off through the parade, and my brother and sister were with me. My daddy wanted to see us in our cowboy outfits. So I talked him on the phone and drove over, and I had his 84-year-old mother with me. And as the door opened, where the elevator, you could look right into my father's room. I hadn't seen him. I had just flown in from Los Angeles. I was told he went into the hospital to have a cyst removed from his neck.
Uh-huh.
That's what I was told. And when I walked in,
maybe that was
part of it. Sure.
Yeah.
And he was big. I never knew he had any heart trouble. I imagine he had an enlarged heart as big as he was. But as we walked off the elevator, they were doing a code blue or whatever that is that they call. And
yes,
a nurse ran out of his room and went, oh, my God, I hope it wasn't that medication, and turned the corner and ran. And I took my brother and sister and his mother down to the end of the hall and came back, and they said he's dead.
Well, I
have no idea what it was, of course. I was more concerned now about my grandmother and the kids and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, the last time I saw him was well over 24 hours before
happened.
So it could have been a number of things, because life is strange. We never know what the body does.
Mm. No, and I didn't know if he had that kind of circulation problem and everything. That's probably, that's probably a pretty...
But anything can cause that.
We're short on time.
Look,
Dawn, life happens. And this is live radio, and you never know what you're going to get. I like to say this program is Welcome to the Swap Shop, where no one knows what normal is, and we make fun of each other's disabilities. So,
that's it. Bless your heart.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
God love you.
Dawn, hang on. I'll talk to you as we go off in the break. AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice.